Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Ethan, Sherwood, Strauss. How's it going?
It's going well. I like that intro. I like
That was like a little dramatic, a little suspense in there. They didn't know which Ethan at first.
I know. And it had the dramatic pausing or the enunciation of the Detroit Pistons. What is it called? What is his job called? The guy who used to yell Billups.
He's the PA announcer, right?
The PA announcer.
Wait,
yes.
No, he's just the PA. Because public arena announcer? Public announcer?
I'm not sure. He's no Franco Finn of the Warriors. I'll tell you what, though.
Oh, shots fired.
The
oh,
opposite.
My God.
Sarcasm
up.
Shots fired.
Caping
sarcasm
up for your Oracle buddies.
Nah.
No?
We'll leave it at that before I get into trouble.
Okay. Yeah, they didn't know if it was Ethan Skolnick from Bleacher Report. They didn't know if it was Ethan Hawke. They didn't know if it was Ethan Allen.
What a letdown for them.
I know. Now I feel bad.
I mean, one of those guys are bringing back from the dead. So that's pretty big right there with Ethan Allen. Skolnick,
right.
He's a bigger deal, and he's talking about the Miami Heat. And then Ethan Hawke, it seems like an interesting fellow. That last movie, Before Midnight, was it? That was pretty good. I think people want to hear from him, too.
I find that I don't really like him.
Really?
I don't think he's that good of an actor. I mean, not he's not bad. He's not like Ryan Gosling bad, but he's definitely like he's had some good moments. He's good in Training Day. Is he good in Training Day? I don't even know that he's good in Training Day.
He's good at seeming scared in a bathtub. He's got that going.
Yeah,
for him.
He's very good at that. I like Gattaca, but I don't know that it's actually good.
Did you buy him as a former high school safety, like they said he was in Training Day?
No, he's 120 pounds.
Yeah, the only less plausible one is Ed Norton in American History X as some great basketball player who's throwing down reverse jams.
Yeah.
Because you can see the way he's dribbling. This is one of my favorite things to do in watching movies is just knowing which actors have never picked up a basketball.
Right.
And yet are in a basketball scene. And I delightfully point this out to Allie when I watch these movies with her, and she just rolls her eyes. She doesn't care. But I do like to go fraud and just point out all sorts of sports fraudulence. Like,
it's been well documented, but the, you know, Wesley Snipes in White Men Can't Jump, like there are times where they have slow motion shots of him dribbling, and he's dribbling with his wrist.
Yeah, and he's squatting weird.
Yeah, he is.
He's really, it's just an odd sort of, he's in a frog-like position.
He keeps doing like dribbling violations, like a lot of carries and stuff. It's like the And One mixtape tour, except without the fun afterwards. there's never any like reward for the violation. It's just like, oh,
don't you think it's Woody? Don't you think it's sort of a stereotypical male thing though to want to, I don't know, to be almost annoyed that your partner, if she's not that into sports, doesn't know that something happened and is fraudulent. I don't know why it frustrates me. I get annoyed because she's watching The Bachelor, and this guy in The Bachelor, let me tell you, so his name, it was Juan Pablo, I believe, and they say he's a professional soccer player, and they're just all about this. And
yeah.
I think to myself, I'm a soccer fan. I haven't heard of this guy. And then I kind of look into it, and I think, well, is he in the MLS? Say he played in America? Yeah, he's not in the MLS. Turns out he's in something called the American Soccer League, and the last time he played was 2008. He's unemployed. He doesn't have a job. All these women are throwing themselves at him, thinking he's Lionel Messi or Cristiano Ronaldo. He's just a dude who played soccer in 2008, you know, in the whatever the soccer D League beneath the D League was. It's just they have no clue.
What?
None.
Aren't you supposed to be rich if you're The Bachelor? Like, isn't that the point? Like, you're some rich. Like, how does he have money then?
They just pulled this guy off the street.
He's good looking.
He's a good looking fellow. He seems nice. I think that's why Allie was caping up for him. He's a likable bachelor.
Oh, yeah. They will definitely cape up for The Bachelor quite quickly if he seems like a nice guy.
And I was just trying to explain to her, you make more money than this guy does. This guy is no catch, let me tell you. Juan Pablo.
Back before I started working for the fine TV company that is CBS. I would watch these shows occasionally. I remember there was a Bachelor season in which the guy didn't pick anybody, and I also remember it must have been on Facebook, because I don't think I was still using MySpace at the time, but there were just all these people in my Facebook feed, like all these women who were just like ripping this guy to shreds, and I remember at the time just thinking like, he's known these women for 6 weeks and he didn't fall in love and you're mad at him. That doesn't seem like a reasonable reaction.
Yeah, the conceit of this show is crazy because it's wholly innocent with them talking about true love and whatnot, yet they're running a public harem for your consumption.
They are.
It's absolutely insane. The values of that show are so twisted.
That's why I only watch the fine programs like Survivor or The Amazing Race or Big Brother. Those are the ones I like.
Yeah, Two Broke Girls, that's on the up and up.
Exactly. There's no harem there.
No, none at all. No. Clean.
Unless there's a delightfully comical take on a harem. Yeah, then it might be in an episode.
A rompy harem.
Yeah, a rompy harem.
Rompy harem.
Rompy harem. Like rompy harem.
Sort of nickname for an old baseball player.
Rompy harem is one of my favorite blues musicians.
Oh yeah, he was the best.
Yeah,
man.
He's
big
so good.
Miles Davis.
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they used to play together.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Wow. Man, to be a fly on that.
Back in the '40s, Miles Davis was around the '40s, right?
Awful heroin addiction, though. Rompy
oh
harem.
God, yeah. Well, he just couldn't help himself.
Yeah, you know, it's hard. The musicians, they're tortured souls.
Rompy Harem's just going to be Rompy Harem.
He's just going to be Rompy Harem.
He doesn't know how to be anything else.
A star like that burns too brightly.
Speaking of Rompy Harems, last night's games were, they were harems of sorts.
They were rompy. Talk about that old James Harden picture of him in the crazy all-white getup.
No, I should have gone there, though. Damn it. I'll fix it in post. Last night's games were not fun, but they were fascinating.
Yeah, I was super entertained by them.
First of all, I didn't know there was a game yesterday in London. I mean, I knew they were going to London, but all of a sudden, I looked at the scoreboard, and it was in the fourth quarter, and I thought, oh, this mid-afternoon, and we've got a game going on.
I mean, are we trying to make these countries not like our sport? I'm not sure of this, where we export the worst games of ours, whether it's football or basketball, and send it over to London. Oh, they'll love it. What's the thinking behind that?
I mean, I think that preseason this looked like a pretty good game, right?
I mean, Atlanta?
Before the injury? No, but Atlanta was like maybe I'm the only one that believed, but like going into the season, I thought Atlanta was a playoff lock.
I like Atlanta, the team. I'm not hating on the team.
Yeah, they're not fun, though. That's true.
They're not going to build up some sort of international following. They can't even build up a local following. Oh, is that going to happen?
That's true.
You're going to become the most popular team in England.
I wonder what it was like for them to play in front of such a big home crowd.
It must have been,
been weird.
Clearly, they didn't play that well. They were freaked out by getting all that support.
There are too many people.
From people who just read the program and were yelling at them to score a goal.
Is it Corvée? Kyle Corvée? Is he French?
In that case, they'd hate him. He'd probably get booed.
So what did you think of the festivities last night? I mean, Pacers-Knicks went about as well as you would expect, right?
It played up the expectations. The cool thing about it, well, okay, so here's how I went about it, because I didn't watch either game last night live, with the exception of the fourth quarter.
Smart decision.
Of the Rockets Thunder game. Instead, I DVR'd it, and then I tried something out, because I knew that I wanted to watch that Pacers Knicks game, but I also knew that it was a total blowout, so I thought, how can I make this better? And I went to one of my old tried and true tactics. I just lied to myself and pretended I was a Pacers fan.
Okay.
I created a whole separate identity for myself, Zach. I was thinking, okay, because I watch them on the exercise bike. I need to get through this. I need to be enthusiastic. You're a different person. Your name is Ethan Smith. You grew up in Indiana. You went to Butler University.
Ethan Smith.
Yeah. You have a blonde crew cut, maybe a mustache.
Oh,
and,
God. Please, you know, somebody Photoshop Chris Mullin's haircut onto Ethan's picture.
maybe you fell out of love with this team after the Malice at the Palace. Mm.
Ooh, there's some drama to this personality.
Yeah, that Ron Artest fight. He made your mustache hairs bristle and twitch with fear. But now you're coming back, and you're loving it, and you're just really into the way and the style that Lance Stephenson is playing with. The way that when he drives, Zach, he almost looks like Deion Sanders high-stepping into the end zone. He's got that kind of body movement to it. It's very unique. It's enjoyable.
The whole time when you're Ethan Smith, Yes. Are you just like Lance Stevenson scores and you just blurt out loud, how is this guy not an all-star? You just is that
no,
the persona?
No, because there's just terrible cultural chauvinism going on, and I'm looking down at the fine people of Indiana because I'm in California and I know nothing about them. So I'm just condescending to them and yelling things like "get her done" and just pretending they're hicks. I think that's what's happening there. But yeah, I know. I do think that game put him into the conversation of making the All-Star team. I'm not opposed to that.
I'm not opposed to it because we're doing this big blowout. On Martin Luther King Day, we're gonna have a live like video show online, and in one of my segments, assuming that I'll have an internet connection to be on video on Monday from a hotel in New York, is All Star stuff. And so like it's like who are your locks, who are your bubble players, and I looked at the East. I'm just like, I would just be fine if they took the six best players from the Pacers and the six best players from the Heat and put them on the All Star team because. Put Kyrie Irving in there because he's fun. But other than that, I would be perfectly happy with that. And even if you didn't do that, Lance Stevenson, yeah, why not? He would be fun in an All-Star game. I'm at the point now where somebody was trying to argue with me yesterday that James Harden should start over Steph Curry in the All-Star game. And my response was just, I think Steph Curry's more fun, so I'd rather have him. And the All-Star game is not an honor anymore in my mind. It's just it's an event. And I would never use that as like, I would never say, oh, well, Kevin Love's a 5-time All-Star. You gotta, you know, I would just never do that. Like, it's just, it seems so weird to me. So yeah, Lance Stevenson would be really fun in an All-Star game. Let's put him in.
He also just might deserve it based on merit because he plays great defense a few times. He guarded Melo. Obviously, that's Paul George's main assignment. Man, Paul George, I'm not saying anything new, but his defense is really something to behold. The way that he will leap on a closeout and extend his arm and then just pull it away at the last second while turning his body away so he doesn't hit the guy upon landing.
Mm-hmm.
So cool to watch. The Knicks were also amusing. I mean, my favorite play of the game was there was some outlet pass to Raymond Felton that completely overshot him, and he recovered the ball kind of in the corner right in front of the three-point line, and with 20 seconds on the shot clock, just chucked a Paul George contested off-balance shot that missed. And it was just, why? What are you thinking?
Well, he didn't leak out for just to dribble the ball back out and reset the offense. And by leak out, I mean just stay in the backcourt.
It's like, I don't want to waste this sprinting that I've done. I have to make something of it.
There were
like four Pacers under the basket, too. It was just, what and why is that happening?
I know that it's, it's still not fun to defend Carmelo, but I just feel bad for him.
Yeah.
And it's to the point where I feel bad for him, and at the same time, I think it's a horrendous idea for the Knicks to re-sign him. You've got to blow it up. Like, I get the whole reason. I don't think he's not worth it. I just think, like, let him go. Like, if you love Carmelo, let him go. Set him free. Just do it. Just get him out of there. Like, he probably wants to be a part of the organization, too. He just wants better teammates. You're not going to get him with James Dolan as the owner. Just get out of there. Spread your wings. Be your own person. Do your thing. Just do you. What other cliches can I throw out
there? I don't know. They all sound like they're part of that Melo ad campaign series the one right now is the one with JB Smoove, and it's like they've never watched the playoffs of course he made it, he's Melo, and I'm thinking, well, obviously you haven't seen the postseason.
This would be a much better ad campaign 4 years ago.
Yes.
It would be that year what was the year they went to the Western Conference final? That's the year they should have done this.
Oh, what was that? Was that 2009?
2009 sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah, that good Nuggets team with Birdman at peak Birdman levels.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was that would be the time to do that.
And I love Carmelo, and I've defended him through that dark period of time and to this day, and I still think it's an awful ad campaign for right now.
Yeah. Well, Melo's interesting because he doesn't really get hit with that choker label because he tries to do too much, and we're more inclined to rip somebody for fading into the background and not asserting himself.
Right.
We'd rather have a guy assert himself in the wrong way than not assert himself at all. And we've seen in these past few postseasons with Carmelo Anthony, he shoots way more than he does in the regular season. He presses and he misses a ton of shots. So it's a different spin on the whole choker stereotype. He's not shying away from the moment. He's hurting his team by trying to step up.
Well, I don't know that he's hurting his team by trying to step up. I don't think they really have any options.
That's also true. I would say even if you're surrounded by a dearth of options, there's too much. And in the past few seasons, it's been too much, and he's had better teams.
Wow, he really does shoot a lot more in the postseason.
Ah, see?
No, I didn't think you were lying. I just wanted to see how much, and it's like significant. It's like five more shots per game.
And the results are worse.
Yes.
Yeah, so...
Well, he's also facing better competition.
That's also true, too. So... This might be the peak of that, because this team surrounding him is not good. So
it's really not good.
So he might just be in it for a round.
I feel like he's playing exactly how you would want a star to play, in the sense that he seems to still be fighting. Like, there was that whole thing last night that Reggie Miller – I agreed with Reggie Miller, and then I immediately took it back. Because he said something stupid, but he dove on the ground and everyone else is just watching him fight for a basketball. And it's like, Carmelo is putting effort out there. Like, he is really trying. Maybe he's not making great decisions when he's trying, but he is really trying. And it seems like, because that team is constructed and playing the way they are right now, that it's so much more than everyone not named Tyson Chandler.
Yes, he's having a good year, and he's not the problem this season.
Right.
He's definitely not the problem, and I don't know if I want to say it's unfortunate or I'm sad. I don't. My heart doesn't bleed for Melo in the way yours does, Zach.
But no, because you hate scorers.
That's not true. I'm very excited for Jordan Crawford's debut. I'm
Oh, let's talk about that. we'll finish this Melo talk, but then we got to talk about that.
Yeah. I'm waiting on you.
I thought you had more to say about Melo.
No. I said what I want to say again. Not only does my heart not bleed for Melo, Zach, but I also don't have this whole repository of Melo information, Melo trivia, Melo hopes, Melo dreams, Melo gear. You
enjoy the fall of a star.
The way he plays, it's funny. It's either aesthetically very pleasing when he's going catch and shoot and just really not spending a whole lot of time holding onto the basketball, and it's glorious like in the Olympics, but then he also has some of the most aesthetically displeasing play where it's just jab step, jab step, jab step. So I'm ambivalent about Melo like I'm ambivalent about a lot of things, and I wouldn't say he's one of my favorite players to watch. I tend to prefer players who are ultra efficient and play good defense.
God, you just needle me constantly.
I'm not trying to.
No, that's the thing. You don't have to try. It's just a natural thing. I would say that the more I think about it, I do think if they had that good Amari, I think that the combination would work.
Yes.
I know, like, Melo's better at the four and all that crap, but if you think about, like, if they had destructive Amari Stoudemire, who was just... you know, just such a force on offense for 30 minutes a game, you would get more of that catch and shoot Olympic Carmelo.
Yeah, that's the fall from grace that saddens me, Zach.
Yeah,
that's the one that makes me sad.
You just like him because he's Jewish.
Oh yeah, definitely. That's what the bias is there. But there's this great Amari mix, probably from around 2005, kind of that era, with. God, what's that song with Eminem and DMX? Was it Go to Sleep?
Oh yeah. Yeah,
that's the best Amari mix, and it's a reminder of how damn good he was. It wasn't Steve Nash just creating this guy. This guy on offense was a force, and it was incredible, and I miss it.
Yeah, I do too, and I really do think, like, I don't think the reason – I don't think the more I think back on it, you know, at the time, the last couple of years it's been, oh, what a terrible decision to pair those two together. No, I actually think it's a good idea. It's just Amari can't be himself anymore.
Yes, and we can debate on whether or not it was a good idea or a bad idea, because once you lose your edge, a player like Amari loses his edge, then he's not giving you a whole lot defensively to compensate. So
I mean,
it might have not been the most the most perceptive strategy or the strategy with the best foresight.
Maybe 5 years was the mistake, but I don't think the signing. I mean, obviously they didn't have Melo at the time, but. I would imagine they were targeting Melo or someone like him. I mean, they had to
have known.
Yeah, I
certainly wasn't laughing and mocking the sign, and it was clear that they got the scraps from that huge free agency season,
right?
And they were making do. But
I mean, it's not like they signed Carlos Boozer.
This is, well, I don't know. I mean, it's comparable, I suppose. But I wasn't hating on it, and they got a good season out of Amare, and it's just sad that this is the guy we're left with, even if we've seen glimpses and flashes this season of a competent Amare Stoudemire.
Yeah, and I don't even care how much he gets paid. Like, he could be getting paid $4 million a year instead of 20 and still be playing, you know, still be the exact same thing he is, and I would still feel equally as bad about it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, who makes you feel worse, Amare or KG this year?
KG, because I'm invested in KG.
Yeah,
I'm emotionally invested in KG. I think I've talked about it before, but like that's part of the reason I just don't panic with this Timberwolves team is because I watched them waste Kevin Garnett. They wasted his career. They wasted 10 years of his career, 12 years of his career, something like that, And then he left, and I was pissed off. I was so pissed off, I tried to become a Bobcats fan at the time.
Oh, wow.
And it just didn't take. I just couldn't care enough about Matt Carroll. But, like, I was... like, I was legit... Or Raymond Felton. I would, like, legitimately try to become a Bobcats fan to start that season off. And, like, a month in, I was like, screw this. I'll just annoyingly watch the Timberwolves. And since then, I've just been kind of dead inside as a T-Wolves fan. And so, like, I enjoy the good moments, and I just don't care about the bad moments because they've broken me. And I'm never going to get back to that point.
Totally understandable. And a little bit of trivia that I love is that, speaking of Matt Carroll, that 2012 Bobcats team, a year later, a season later, only six players from that roster of, I believe, maybe 16, were still NBA players a season later.
I remember that year they came to Minneapolis and the Wolves beat them. I'm pretty sure the Wolves beat them.
It'd be bad if they didn't.
Yeah, it'd be bad. No, yeah, the Wolves beat them. And after the game, there were players in the locker room talking about, like, you know, they're like, I can't believe, like, who is Corey Higgins? Like, they were honestly asking who Corey Higgins was. And one of the players looked at me and was like, do you know this guy? I was like, I really have never heard of him. Like, I said, I'm a huge basketball nerd. I have no idea who this guy is. And then another, I can name this player because I don't want to get other guys in trouble, but someone shed some light on the situation. Anthony Tolliver was in the locker room. He says, you know, it's the GM's son. And I laughed, and he's like, no, seriously, it's the GM's son. I was like, oh, okay.
It's incredible. And the most amazing aspects of that team are also that it wasn't like there were some competent, great players of the players who were NBA players a season later. They were rookies, so they weren't even giving you great stuff that season.
No, Kemba was really bad, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then he got good.
Maybe the best player on that team was waived that year because he wasn't trying, and now he's a vital, vital piece on a championship contender, and that's Boris Diaw.
That's true.
What a bizarre situation.
Wow, that's a fun year.
And I don't want to bring it up, but that perspective, that retrospective right there, I know everybody liked to mock the whole idea that that Kentucky team could beat them, but I think a year later there's a better case for such a thing happening. We don't have to revisit it. I know it's a sore subject for whatever the reason in the basketball Twitter sphere.
They did get mad. I mean, I got mad at you at the time because I just thought it was ridiculous. I still think it's a ridiculous position.
I was just, you know, it's funny, the positions that you tend to get assailed for are often not ones where you're very strident in your opinion or strong about it, but ones where you go, it's a possibility. I know you lash out at the you can make an argument sort of trope, but
yes.
Those types of statements that I make tend to get more anger than when I make a statement. I was just saying it's very possible. That's
all. Much like a dog could play defense in the NBA.
Well, that one's a joke. The other one I do think is plausible, at least, in this hypothetical world where such a thing can happen.
Sure. Speaking of plausible, it's plausible that Jordan Crawford is the best bench player already on the Warriors.
I would prefer Draymond just because of that defense, but they might
just
have
just wait
more...
till you see this playmaking.
They might have more of a crying need for Jordan Crawford, and I'm prepared to feel stupid for being excited for it, but I am excited for it just to see a guy out there with the bench unit doing things, Zach. Doing things.
Oh, doing all kinds of things. Some of them great.
I can't wait for it. I miss the days of Nate Robinson and that crappy bench mob that they had. And yeah. Nate Robinson was just allowed to do whatever he wanted because they weren't going to do anything and they had no offensive skills otherwise. I kind of enjoy seeing a gunner just freed to be as dumb as he wants.
That's a nice way of putting it. And you have to love the trade if you're a Warriors fan because you gave up nothing. I mean, no offense to Tony Douglas, but he wasn't doing anything for you. I mean, he's playing defense, but...
Well, there's a concerning aspect there, and I wrote about that, which is the trade was good, but the process they used to get there was a little troubling because they get Tony Douglas, and we have reams of information that tells us he's not a backup point guard. You know, right. Anybody who followed the Knicks could tell you that. And so instead of teaming him up with Andre Iguodala, which would make perfect sense because Iguodala can handle and make plays and Douglas can hit spot up threes, instead of doing that, they just rolled Tony Douglas out there with this offensively putrid lineup and said, hey, make plays, Tony Douglas. I mean, it's just – you're just setting him up to – it's a suicide mission. And so I just wonder if everybody was on the same page.
Yeah, probably. Well, they would have to be, right?
I don't know. I believe they were on the same page to a certain extent. You know what? It might have been this. It might have been they wanted to play Iguodala more. He got hurt. Now they're managing his minutes. He's not playing as much, and therefore he's not in the backup situation. So he's not paired with Douglas. So Douglas is expendable. That is a rationale I can follow and accept, and is comforting. But if it was just we're going to bring Tony Douglas in, he's going to be backup point guard, that'd be a little concerning.
Maybe this isn't fair, but could part of it be that Kent Bazemore was supposed to be a role player and isn't?
He fulfills his role in celebrations.
Well, yes, but I meant more in a on the court in the game kind of, not rushing on the court to celebrate, but more like
yes,
Put into the game to do stuff.
I don't know. I had some hope that he could.
Or was that just like? Hey, they're starting to develop him this summer. It might be a couple years away.
Yeah, I don't know what their expectations were. I had a little hope that he could be sort of a poor man's Avery Bradley, but it looks like he can't even be that. And it's just that shot is so unreliable, and he can't make plays for other players, and so it's looking a little bit grim. I know that people in his camp, and yes, Kent Bazemore has a camp, were a little bit annoyed that he was always getting thrown out there with Tony Douglas and he never got to play off the ball with Curry.
Yes.
And the feeling was that he's a shooting guard. We want him to be a shooting guard. We don't think he's a backup point guard. And this is just exposing him to failure. Now, that might be a rationalization from their perspective, but perhaps we'll see a better Bazemore now that he's not thrown out there to create offense for other people in this terrible, you know, putrid bench lineup. I'm not totally optimistic, but we'll just have to see.
So, is there a way that this Jordan Crawford trade doesn't work?
Of course, it's Jordan Crawford.
No,
of course.
First of all, slow down. This is a dear friend of mine, even though we've never met. This is a family member.
At what point are we in the Jordan Crawford Renaissance? Is there?
We've been in it. It's been going on for 3 years.
Are we near the enlightenment?
This is, hopefully, I've been enlightened for years.
The Jordan Crawford enlightenment, where he learns smarter shots?
I mean, he's played so much better. He's played so much smarter this year.
True.
I wonder, did Brad Stevens turn him around, or did Brad Stevens make him? You know, like, did that system, that style of play make, like, how does he fit into what the Warriors like to do?
I believe that's the concern.
Because he's not much of a shooter.
Yeah. He's not much of a shooter. And the guess is he's going to be playing with that Warriors bench lineup of Bazemore, Spates, Green, and Barnes. And just good luck, buddy. So, yeah, it could definitely not work out. And it could be liberating, too, just to have, as we talked about, the ability to be as dumb as you want out there because the other guys aren't going to do any better. So I think it could easily be disastrous, but I'm very excited for it, and I could see it working too. It's intriguing. I mean, it feels as though the Warriors needed this.
He's a playmaker, which helps.
Yes.
Like, he's obviously not this, but he is much more of that Jarrett Jack type of guy off the bench, just without the three-point shot.
Yeah, they were looking for their Jarrett Jack replacement, and you know what was odd? I was there the night after the trade, and there just wasn't a lot of mention about it. I asked questions of what he could bring and if they were excited or interested. There were two things. There was A, not a whole lot of talk about missing Tony Douglas, aside from there was a brush and a sign on it that said, don't touch Tony Douglas's brush, or Tony's brush. And there wasn't a whole lot of excitement for bringing Jordan Crawford in. So maybe they're just hyper-focused on having lost embarrassingly to the Nuggets on national TV.
Yes.
And maybe that was the deal. But it was surprising to see neither of the emotive responses.
Is there panic in Oakland again?
There's always panic when they lose.
When they lose, yeah. But, I mean, things were riding high. They were on that 10-game win streak. They
full
almost
squad,
swept.
Full squad.
Sure. They almost swept that road trip. You know, things were riding high. And then that, I don't know, was that loss really that embarrassing? I mean, they're a better team than the Nuggets, and they were at home. But I don't know that it was embarrassing. It wasn't a good loss.
Yeah, it was a bad loss. There
because J.J. Hickson closed it out? Is that the reason?
Yeah. But for some reason, I was more embarrassed for Curry before I saw the replay and saw that he had actually dribbled it off his leg as opposed to J.J. Hickson ripping him.
Yes.
It's funny that that's less embarrassing, but it totally is. Your leg is a far better defender than J.J. Hickson is.
Yes, being uncoordinated is definitely better than just getting ripped by J.J. Hickson.
So, yeah, it was a little bit embarrassing. You know, the Nuggets probably hit more threes than they would usually hit.
Yes.
But I think fans were frustrated. They were frustrated by the lack of Bogut when they needed Bogut. And the rationale for that was that the Nuggets were going small, and so therefore no Bogut. And I get that, but he should have played more. And I also think people are a little fed up with that bench lineup, the bench mob that comes in all at once. It was staggered a bit with some Klay Thompson, some Iguodala, but that's been one of the criticisms of Jackson so far, is that he does the hockey substitution and it's just all bad bench at the same time. It's the flip side of full squad.
It is the flip side of full squad, whatever that means. Has Harrison Barnes really been that bad? His numbers don't look bad. The eye test, there's definitely concern, but he's shooting 42% from three.
Yeah, at least he's given you that. His defense has really slipped. His defense doesn't look as good as last year. He looks a little bit lost and out of place. And he'll do things like giving a guy baseline when it doesn't really make sense to, and people just blow past him. And even though the conventional numbers might not say it, he is getting outplayed by Draymond Green.
Yes.
Draymond's just such a superior defensive player, and he moves the ball. And Barnes is frustrating because he's a bit of a ball stopper. There's a little bit of Rudy Gay to his game,
yeah,
where they often have him posting up, and I can deal with some post-ups if it's Klay Thompson because he's a good post player. But with Barnes, he's not a great shooter. He doesn't have incredible strength.
It feels like, hey, you're tall.
Yeah.
You're tall and long, go post up.
And he doesn't have good passing vision. And so it doesn't really leverage his skill set, and it grinds the offense to a halt. And so his plus-minus numbers are awful in part because of that. I don't know if it's time to panic about him necessarily, but I do know that the Warriors were really optimistic about him in the preseason.
Yes.
And remain that way. And it's an open question as to whether or not they're just in denial and this isn't working out well.
Yeah, I guess the weird thing is that he can't dribble at all.
Yeah.
He can't create.
He can't
create out of the post.
Yes.
Does he have a position? Because there was the, you know, use him as a stretch four thing, and which is still not a bad idea. But I do wonder, like, does he have an actual position? Maybe that doesn't matter so much anymore. But he seems maybe a little Marvin Williams ish.
I think that's a fair comparison, and I also think that the denial or the optimism gets in the way of using him correctly, because I've advocated using him as a stretch four. I want them to use him that way, but there are a few problems and sensitivities to doing that. A, it's a tacit admission that he can't really play the three because he doesn't have good enough ball skills.
Right.
Then that's tough to swallow for them because they kind of didn't draft Andre Drummond, and they took Harrison Barnes. So that's tough. And B, if it works out spectacularly and Barnes is incredible and the team plays in the way they did in the playoffs with Barnes at the four, then the questions about whether or not that's the approach for them instead of the David Lee approach arise again. So I do think that, consciously or not, those considerations get in the way of using him that way, and Jackson has been totally averse to small ball this season.
Is that, do you think it's something that he just doesn't buy into all that much unless it's a necessity? Or do you think maybe it's like it's a sneaky coach tactic of break that out in the postseason?
I don't know. I also can't differentiate between where Jackson's ideas began and where the management ideas end. And people are quick to blame Jackson and say he should be doing this, he should play Draymond Green over Barnes, what an idiot. And I'm thinking, well, management and Bob Myers drafted Harrison Barnes. I don't think that they want Jackson to play their second round pick big minutes over their first round pick this early. That's kind of saying that you made the wrong pick. So I'm not certain if that's totally Jackson's call or if there's a political consideration there. There totally might be. So the boring answer is I don't know. It would be cool if they break that out in the playoffs. I'm not optimistic about it since last season what forced them to break it out was really an injury.
That's true. How do we fix Steph Curry?
Man, that's the other weird thing where I just don't know. We keep wanting to jump to a conclusion because we like life explained. We're human beings who want patterns, and we want the world to make sense. And a world in which Steph Curry is missing his threes doesn't make sense. It makes life feel like a typo.
It's gotten worse every month this season.
It's crazy. And so people are positing that it's fatigue, but I don't necessarily buy that because even if there's no Jarrett Jack around, he gets hidden a lot more defensively with Iguodala here. So I'm not sure he's expending less energy. Also, he's missing wide open shots, and he's not missing them all short. He's just missing them. And people say it's the shot selection, that was Curry's best theory on it, that he's shot hunting a little bit, but I don't buy that. He's shooting 32% on corner threes right now. He's just missing. It's weird. It could be randomness. Maybe this is one crazy fluke of a few months long, and it's going to regress to the mean, and it will do so gloriously. But it's been a bit disconcerting. I frankly, aesthetically, I'd rather watch the Warriors be 500 and see Curry make 50% of his threes. So it's been less enjoyable to me to not have that certainty of an open Steph Curry three goes in.
It's funny that he's slumping at 38% from three.
Yes. Yeah. But it's true.
Really, no, it is true. But it's just, it's funny how, like, I mean, I wrote that you wrote a bunch of stuff about it too, but I wrote during the playoffs last year, like, we have to change the way we think about 3-point shooting with Steph Curry because he is that different. He is that special 3-point shooter that we've never seen before. And this is kind of an example of that, of a guy slumps at 38%, and it's not a joke. Like, he's actually slumping at 38% because he's that good.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big difference. That 7% difference between, that's huge. If you apply that to other 3-point shooters who are more normal, it takes them from being a good 3-point shooter to being a totally below average one. So yeah, I think I like that perspective. Of this is indicative of what an alien he is.
Yeah.
I just hope he returns to being the alien he was.
I don't buy the fatigue thing either, unless there is, you know, he didn't. I don't know how you would even prove this or if he would even admit it, but like, let's say he didn't. You know, he's more of a star now. He has more commitments. He didn't get to train as much or didn't get to work as hard as he would in most off seasons. I would imagine that he came into camp in the best shape of his life, because everybody does, but let's say he didn't come into camp the best shape of his life, maybe then fatigue is an issue. But he's playing fewer minutes, his usage rate isn't that much higher than it was last year, it's less than 2% higher. Like, I'm not sure I buy fatigue either.
Well, we can posit some conspiracy theories. Maybe because he's now persona non grata with Nike after spurning them, and he didn't make Adidas happy either by going to this newfangled Under Armour. Maybe they have some sort of Nike rep at the games who's blowing an invisible blow dart at the ball as it floats through the air to kind of knock it off course. That's my theory.
That's an excellent theory.
Thank you.
Yeah, I don't know how you could disprove that.
It's impossible. It's like disproving ghosts. You can't do it.
Right? Plus, you know, there's that Patrick Swayze movie that kind of proves it.
I'll accept that as proof. You know, I don't need to know anything more. I'll trust my gut on that.
Yeah. Can we talk real quick about you calling me at 2 a.m.?
I felt so guilty. Oh, I'm so sorry. Well, I saw that you tweeted. I didn't want to wake you up. But basically, we had this logistical snafu where I didn't make it clear to you whether or not you were helping me out on the True Hoop TV Live. And I felt really guilty about whether or not I'd messed up something in your scheduling.
No.
And I probably created more of a problem by maybe waking you up. That was maybe ruder than the thing I did initially. Yet, I had so much guilt that I just needed to address it. So, in a way, I was even more selfish while trying to be nice.
Which is actually, that sounds about right. Is that, yeah, you would make a gesture and it would end up being worse. No, it didn't. Yeah. It didn't wake. I was up probably 45 minutes after you called me. When at a certain point during the night, my phone goes to do not disturb. So I didn't even I didn't even know that you called until quite a bit after. I think around 2:30, I looked at my phone and saw it and was like, oh, Ethan called. That's weird. Oh, he left a voicemail. Maybe he's dying. Maybe he's in need of help. And I was his first. Like, I was his first drunk call. Yeah. Then I was like, or maybe he's just, you know, maybe he's just in the mood to talk. I don't know.
I was at Oracle. I hadn't left Oracle at that point, and so I don't know. I felt like I wanted to address it before.
Maybe he's just got that thirst. I don't know. I don't know what's going on.
Somebody asked before we started recording this about it, on your podcast, I should talk about whether or not I sleep.
Oh, let's guess get into that.
The answer is yes.
Because otherwise you'd be dead.
The answer is yes, but I do have a bit of insomnia, and I also think that I'm unfairly I get asked this a lot on the Twitter, I think in part because I'm on the West Coast and more people are on the East Coast, so it's more apparent. It looks like I'm up later, but there's also some insomnia. It's difficult. I have a stream of consciousness that does not end, and of useless thoughts strung together, and one thought brings up the next thought. It's very difficult for me.
Yeah, that's troubling at times, isn't it?
Oh, it's very troubling. I can't stay on topic, but it's been good for, you know, coming up with article ideas and what have you. And for you, I believe you have a degree of the same thing. I mean, how else are you going to come up with bad movies and basketball and combine them together for an audience?
I was actually really upset with myself. I was getting I was winding down, getting water and stuff. So I paused. I was supposed to write my rabbit hole post last night. And it's like, I don't know, like 12:15 or something like that, 12:10. And I'm like, all right. So I paused the TV because I just found out that Hard Target had just started, which is
hard to say. It's a tongue twister.
It is. It was one of my favorite. It's one of my favorite Van Damme movies because somehow, you know, he has that French Canadian accent, even though I know he's from Brussels or whatever, but he has that French Canadian accent and yet somehow does a horrible French accent in Hard Target. Like, I know it's supposed to be more of a Cajun thing, but I just don't feel like that would be asking me, like, Zach, you're from California, do a Southern California accent for this role. I feel like I could get that pretty easily.
I feel like you could get that pretty easily too. You just have to have some vocal fry and some upspeak, and to have sort of a monotone trail off.
You're from San Diego. Did you have to work hard to lose that accent?
Do have a little bit of that.
You do, right? Yeah. You slip into it every once in a while.
Yeah, especially, I mean, speaking of drinking, if there's some drinking going on, and I'm in San Diego, I might start talking about Philip Rivers, and I just miss LT. LT was the best. It was great when he played back in the day. Yeah, there are tons of accents around the country, and we only really know or talk of the famous ones in New York and Boston and the Southern accent, but they're all over, and yeah, I believe there's such a thing as a San Diego accent. I believe
there's
such a thing as an African American Bay Area accent that you'll hear Gary Payton use.
Yes,
and
absolutely,
that's not a famous one, but it definitely exists.
So I feel like it's weird that Jean-Claude Van Damme screwed up the Cajun accent.
I don't, because if you told me to do an Australian accent and Let's just assume that Jean-Claude Van Damme speaks French, even though, you know, Flemish is the language of his country. I assume that most people in that country also speak French and his name is French. But if you ask me to do an Australian accent or a British accent, I would screw that up because it's almost too close to the accent that I have and those lines get blurry.
I disagree. I don't think it's close at all. I think a better example is ask a New Zealander to do an Aussie accent because there is some difference.
Yes.
There's some difference, but I don't think that, like, he speaks in a broken French accent anyway. How could you not make it like the Cajun accent? Like, he's predisposed. I don't want to sound racist, but he's predisposed to do this Cajun accent, and he screws it up gloriously. He gloriously screws it up. Anyway, point is, I forgot what we were talking about.
It's okay. We can talk about also that Thunder Rockets game because that was fascinating in its own way. That was crazy. Did you see that one?
I had some point about my writing process last night. Oh, it was about not sleeping.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's not even a good story, actually. I paused the TV, was supposed to write the thing, I fell asleep, and it was like the first good night of sleep I've gotten in 2 weeks.
Oh, that must feel good. I don't know what that feels like. I assume it's great.
I need one more that's probably not going to come tonight. And by the time I have that chance to do it again, then I'll need two, and I won't get it. It's a vicious cycle. But yeah, I feel like it just gets in the way. Sleep just gets in the way. Like, if you can get 5 hours of sleep every night, four to five hours of sleep, like, I just feel like that's enough.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in sleep, but I'm a hypocrite because I rob myself of it. Yeah. And it's tough. I mean, we were watching these games that end really late at night. Then we have all these thoughts about these games.
Oh, please. You're on the West Coast. You don't know what late at night is.
Oh, it's something I still have to deal with because even if on the East Coast it's up later to watch the West Coast games, the West Coast games are more important to me. So, this is a stupid argument. You're right.
It is. I've lived where you are. There's no comparison.
I just realized it was indefensible and that I was maybe through lack of sleep going down a really dumb path.
I will say this. I appreciate you giving up your argument because so often I will argue with someone just to see when they will give up their argument, and it's almost never. And I think it's a sign of character when you realize I have no argument. It's really stupid. I think when you can admit that, if you fold, I think it's a sign of character. And so sometimes I'll just see if those people have character in that way. I appreciate that you showed a little character there.
There's a dearth of that on the internet. Everybody's raising on the internet. Everyone's re-raising.
Everyone's just going over the top constantly.
Everyone's mortgaging their house. They're throwing their house in as collateral in the argument.
They are. They're all putting their wife up for a night with their wife into the pot.
That became such a funny trope in movies and TV. There was always the sleazy rich guy who wanted to spend a night with your wife.
There's like Indecent Proposal. There's Honeymoon in Vegas.
Isn't there one with Sarah Jessica Parker?
Yeah,
like
that's Honeymoon in Vegas.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And there's the Simpsons. There's a Simpsons episode like that.
That's the worst one. Indecent Proposal is great because she gets to sleep with Robert Redford. Like, good for you.
Yeah.
But Indecent Proposal, it's James Caan.
Yeah. Oh, that's not great.
It's like a Oompa Loompa with blonde hair. That's how he's built.
Oh yeah, that's rough. And what's with these sleazy rich guys where that's their thing that they want to do? Isn't the idea of being rich that you become more attractive for having this money and you just attract women? Why are you looking around the scene saying that guy's married? Maybe I could pay to spend a night with his wife.
It's a power play, I think.
It's a power play.
Yeah, it's definitely a power play. It's a power play of I'm so rich I can buy anything I want, and I want that guy's marriage. I want to buy the sanctity of that guy's marriage.
Just for an evening.
Just for an evening.
I think it's used because it creates this kind of movie dilemma of what do you do as the husband? What do you do as the wife? And
how important is money to you?
Yeah. I just have a problem. I think it's sort of – it's probably something that doesn't happen a lot in real life.
No. I can't imagine. They probably just like call up a supermodel and say, hey, I'm in town.
Yeah.
I'm in town and I've got a bag of cocaine. I've got a Ziploc bag of cocaine for you.
Otherwise known as Friday Night at the Harper House.
Sure. I think Indecent Proposal pulled it off really well, though. That's a good movie.
I've never seen it, Zach.
Oh, you should watch it as soon as we're done.
I'll watch it when you watch Pitch Perfect.
Oh, my God. Dan Wyke will not leave me alone about that. Every time he sees that it's on, He will tweet me or text me like, "Hey, Pitch Perfect's on. Got to watch it." I don't like it.
Kind of movie you'd like.
I don't like Anna Kendrick. I just don't.
I'm not a big fan of hers either, but I think we're increasingly finding from our Twitter conversations on the subject that we don't like a lot of actors and actresses, and maybe we just need to recalibrate how we judge them.
Yes. Yes, I'm fine with that. Everything, that whole subject is the Ying-Yang Twins to me. It just is. Like, I love the Ying-Yang Twins, but I can recognize they're not good. If you can just say, hey, I like looking at Ryan Gosling for 2 hours. You know, like, it's just...
Who doesn't?
He's easy on the eyes. I'd be fine with that. I like looking at Ryan Gosling for 2 hours. I just don't like watching him act.
Yeah, I think you were fair to say that, and Andrew Han had a great point, too, that... Was it Han? Somebody made the point that Leonardo DiCaprio is probably the most overrated actor guy. I'm with that. DiCaprio always feels like DiCaprio to me in every movie, and he's also not very emotive. There's something not totally human about DiCaprio to me. At the same time, he picks great movies. I don't mind his presence in a movie.
Yeah. I enjoy almost every movie he's in. I actually thought his best performance, which is probably in one of his worst movies of the last decade, was The Departed. I think
I agree with you.
Because he does lack that emotion, which is exactly what that character needed.
Because he's such a reserved, he's such a keep people at arm's length. For some reason, I'm drawing an analogy to the Olivia Wilde character in Drinking Buddies. I have no idea why. But somebody who has some hostility in them that prevents them from having an emotional connection.
Yeah, yeah. And so I agree. He is a very, very much plays a type. And there's so many that do, like Denzel Washington does that, George Clooney does that, Leonardo DiCaprio does that. They're all guys who are great at playing themselves, but I don't know that you can call them a great actor because they don't have a ton of range, which is not a problem. I don't find that to be a problem.
Denzel. I think Denzel has range, and I feel like
I think he used to, and then I think he just started doing the Training Day character.
Oh, where has my little Jake gone? Oh, where could he be?
He's just that character no matter what the role is.
Where are you, Jake?
I want you to watch back-to-back. I want you to watch Training Day, and I want you to watch American Gangster. And tell me the difference in that character other than the name.
Does he do the evil Denzel laugh in both?
Oh, of course.
Because I would need to rewatch that.
There is one difference, and it's... It's something I can't really say, but he said he even has the exact same like tone and delivery of a phrase of in one movie it's my man and the other one it's my think of a racist term.
It has that rhythm to it.
The exact same thing. Yeah, it's the exact same thing.
Yes. Can we talk a little? I want to get to Rocket Thunder because I got to run pretty soon.
Let's do Rocket Thunder for like 5-6 minutes.
Because I just want to talk about this one thing that entertains me. Stupendously, and was I want. Was it
Clutch? Did you know that Clutch the Bear has been getting naked for free throws?
I did not know that.
To distract, I noticed it last night, and I tweeted about it, and I had a ton of Rockets fans like, "Yeah, this is a thing."
That's incredible. It's great. Love that.
Yeah,
that's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
So that's great novelty. I love that. I want that to continue. I also love this new thing where when a team's falling apart, David Aldridge gives you some report from the huddle and digs up some dirt on the team as they're falling apart.
He's really good. I love David Aldridge.
But it's like it's in-game and it's just some humiliating thing where when it was the Thunder losing before, it's – and Serge Ibaka says that he doesn't know what – Reggie Jackson's even doing, and that there's just no plan out there. And then this time it was similar. Dwight Howard is just people are complaining, and you know nobody can get him the ball, and it's just he digs up dirt from the huddle, and he just makes that situation sound as panicky and awful as possible, and freaks those fans out.
20-second timeout. James Harden didn't have time to go to the bathroom. He peed in Monty Unis' shoes during the timeout. Like that's what he's doing, and now Monty Unis, he can't run.
He can't run. It's just, you know, it's wet. It's bad. He feels humiliated. It's going to be very difficult to wage this comeback. Right
I wish I had picked a different player than Monty Unis because I kind of screwed up his name as I started saying it.
Well, it's either Domo.
Yeah.
They go with a few of them.
Yeah.
I can't remember what they use on that Rockets broadcast. Isn't it Doma?
I think they go Doma.
Which is... which is also the legislation that has been banned, the Defense of Marriage Act, which is very confusing.
Sure.
He was balling. He was balling for some of last night.
He's good. He's a good player.
Ibaka. Oh my God, dude. We're going to have to recalibrate this whole Ibaka situation because he was the archetypal gets blocks, but he's not actually that good guy.
He's a good defender now.
He's so good now.
Yeah, he's really good.
He's so good.
Theory. Quick theory.
Yeah.
I feel like that's the way to become a good defender.
To initially be the blocks guy and then learn how to
be the blocks guy. You're too aggressive. You're too jumpy. And then you learn to dial it in while still knowing the timing of blocking a shot.
Yeah. Oh, he had them so scared. He was such a factor in them scoring 19 points in that second half.
He really was.
You can tell why he has fewer blocks because he gets in position to thwart would-be drivers, and that's different than being out of position, and then they run past you, and they get more layups that way, but at the same time, you get more blocks, because they're rushing past you, so you get more block opportunities.
Yep.
Now, they know where you are. It's like, to go back to pokers and raises, he's representing something, and that freaks them out. And that weak side block shot blocking is cool and all, but it's not really a psychological impact on the other team when you're coming out of nowhere to do it. You need to be asserting yourself as a threat to cut down on them taking easy opportunities.
Is that like representing an area code? And also, what a great decision to represent area codes instead of zip codes, because that would have gotten confusing.
Oh, it's very confusing.
Yeah.
It's ludicrous. It's representing an area code.
Sure.
Or at least having good things in those area codes.
Yeah, absolutely. it was a collapse on national TV, and to score 73 points and then 19 points, I guess it's the biggest half disparity in NBA history or something. I can't remember what the stat was, but is that something where you just like, oh, that was weird? Or is it like, oh, yeah, they've got flaws? What do you think?
I believe they have flaws.
Well, yeah, you thought they had flaws before, they do. They're not a perfect
team. No, I think
team.
They had flaws before, but I also think that this is indicative of how they're a high variance team and also how the Thunder are an awesome defensive team. So it's just those two combined factors where the threes go in, hooray Rockets, the threes rim out, fire everybody. And it was funny to me that the conversation became all about Dwight Howard when the perimeter guys went 0-14 on threes and coughed the ball up 10 times. I think two of those, one turnover was Dwight, one was Domo. So I don't think that was Dwight's fault. And so, hey, the Rockets, they might not be as good as we thought they would be. They're still a dangerous lower seed should they get in in the right matchup.
Isn't Domo that weird, like, stuffed animal thing?
Is it a type of kung fu?
That's racist.
Sorry. Is it a type of sushi?
That's better. That's much better. Yeah, no, I think it's like a kind of, like, eel.
Yeah.
It's a cut of eel.
A marinated eel.
Yeah, marinated eel with a little chili glaze.
Oh, a little chili glaze? Oh, yeah. That's wonderful.
No, definitely, I would order the sashimi domo and just like the glaze on the side so you can do it yourself.
I get it, Izakaya. Throw it on the grill. I like that.
Oh, look at you.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's that Bay Area coming through.
It's definitely coming through. I'd recommend that to everybody. Japanese barbecue, Izakaya. That's if you can find it, not a bad option.
It's really a fantastic option. Well, I'll let you go. I know you got to run. Ethan Smith / Ethan Sherwood Strauss. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, man. Anytime.